Haman finds Mordechai teaching about a minchas nedava to his talmidim, and the Avni Nezer has a whole presentation here based on various sources that at this point in time there was a mizbeach in the Mokom HaMikdash. Why is that so? How is that so? Because at the beginning of the Malchus of Koresh, he, the king, gave permission to the Jews to build the Beis HaMikdash. And many of the Jews came to live in Eretz Yisrael, and they began the process of building the Beis HaMikdash. They built the mizbeach, and they started bringing korbanos.
Without
a mizbeach, they set down the foundations of the mizbeach, the yisodos. But then what happened is that there was anti-Semitism, there was a ksav sitna. We're not going to go into all these details, but they told the Jews they have to stop. They terminated the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, there are two opinions as to whether or not they continued at this point to bring korbanos on the mizbeach. One opinion says that once the goyim stopped them from building the mizbeach because of this sitna, this terrible lashon hara against the Jews, then the goyim also forced them to shut down the mizbeach, so to speak. And that's why, hence, the Talmidim said to Haman that we brought this korban mincha at the time the omer was brought when the mikdash stood, but today we don't have it. However, the Meshech Chachma disagrees with the Avni Nezer, and he insists that they continue to be makiv korbanos on the Mizbeach, even though the bais wasn't built. And that's based on the principle that Kedushas Mizbeach is Kitchel Shaita, Vikich Losin Lava. However, the Minchas HaOmer they couldn't bring. And the reason for that is because there's a separate halacha with regard to Minchas HaOmer, that the Sa'orim from the that's brought for the Omer, the Gemara says, Minochas have to be grown on the soil of Eretz Yisrael. And that means that the Minchas HaOmer has to come from Tvua that's sanctified with Kedushas HaOretz. And here we have a difference between the Mikdash, when I say the Mikdash, I mean the Mikdash and Yerushalayim, and Eretz Yisrael. As far as the Mikdash is concerned, Kitchel Shaitav, Kitchel Asad Lava. But as far as Eretz Yisrael is concerned, the Kedusha Rishona of Yahushua was Kitchel Shaitav, Lo Kitchel Asad Lava. And therefore, during the 70-year period of Golos, between the Churban of Bayis Rishon and the building of Bayis Sheni, which is called Golos Bavel, at that point, the Kedushas HaOretz, as far as Karka is concerned, the Eretz Yisrael was Paka. And therefore, they couldn't possibly bring the Minchas HaOmer. Hence, the Talmidim told Haman that at the time of the Mikdash, we had the Omer. So basically, just to summarize, the Meshech Chochma is differentiated between two dinim. There's one din as far as Mizbeach and Mokom HaMikdash, and that continued even during the 70-year period of Golos, because the Yerushalayim and the Mikdash is Kitchel Shaita v'Kitchel Asalova. But there's another din as far as Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, and Golos in the first round was Mafkia the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, so you couldn't bring a Minchas HaOmer because the Omer was not grown on soil that was endowed with Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Now, if you recall, when the Talmidim told Haman that they have this kapara power, at least at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, so Haman responded and he said, you know what, I purchased you, meaning the right to annihilate you, for aseres alfe kikre kaspa. And Tosus says that that sum of aseres alofim kikre kesef is shoveh. It corresponds to the matzis hashekel that every Jew would bring. Now there are many, many shitos here in the Achronim as to how to work out the mathematics here and calculate that matzis hashekel is the same as aseres alfei kikre kaspa. I'm just going to mention two approaches. Again, each one of these approaches has to be worked on, you know, with a fine. I'm just giving milamala, as we say, b'gadol. The box approach is based on the fact that there's a difference between a kikar of chol and a kikar of kodesh. And this is based on a sugya mesechta b'choros. A mana of kodesh is twice the value of a mana of chol. So the Bach, therefore, based on that principle, calculates the following. He says that an average Jew would have given machtzis hashekel during the course of his lifetime, on the average, 50 years from the age of 20, because only from the age of 20 that there was machtzis hashekel, and the average person would live till 70, so there was 50 years of machtzis hashekel. And he says the following, that if you multiply the machtzis hashekel times 50, then it comes out to 5,000 kikros kodesh. Now, if the kikros kodesh is twice the value of the kikros chol, then if you multiply the 5,000 kikros of kodesh by 2, you end up with asara salafim kikros kesef be kikros shel chol. So in other words, the sum of money with which Haman purchased from Achashverosh the rights to annihilate the Jews is exactly equivalent to the average machzah shekel that any particular Jew would give during the course of his lifetime. That's the Bach's approach. The Pnei Yehoshua has a different approach for this calculation. And that is that Haman wanted to buy the Bnei Yisrael as avodim. Now, the Torah sets up the Shavyo Shel Eved, that's Kotzuv Min HaTorah, Shloshim Shkolim. Now, Shloshim Shkolim times 600,000 is 18 million shekels. And Haman gave 10,000 alofim kikros because, at the time of Yechezkel, that was the exact midah, that was the exact value of this sum of money. So again, we have two approaches here. We have the approach of the Bach, which means that we multiply machzah shekel times 50, and that gives us the Asaros Kikros Kesef. Or we have the approach of the Pnei Yehoshua, that he was buying the Jews as Avadim, and that's Shloshim Shkolim, which you multiply times 600,000.
And why is the Matzah Shekel important?
The Matzah Shekel itself is a Mechaper for Klal Yisrael. And here Haman was attacking the Jewish people as a nation. The Matzah Shekel is each individual linking up with the Tzibur, the nation of Klal Yisrael. So there are many, many other different explanations here as to how you calculate the Aseres Alofim Kikar Zahav.
And this is going back to the discussion where Haman said
that why Aseres Alofim Kikar are going to be connected right. your Kapara. Now the Gemara darshins that when they hung up Haman on the tree, it says Asher Heichin Lo. And Pashtus, it means he prepared this tree for Mordechai. But what happened was, at the end, Venafochu, instead of Mordechai getting hung on the tree, it was on that very tree that Haman was hung up on. But Chazal go beyond that. Because Chazal say that already Bishas HaSiyas HaEitz, it was made for Haman. And this is based on the Medrash. The Medrash says that when Haman was preparing the tree, he modaris atzmo la'etz. He actually stood at the tree, and I guess he assumed that Mordechai was more or less the same height. And he wanted to show all the avadim where exactly they would put the tliya. A baskel came out for Shamayim and said, no lecha ha'etz, that the word asher heichin lo means that this etz is perfect for you, and it's the right size for you. And it's not coincidental that you use your own body to measure the amount of the size and the height of the eights. Now, the Medrash goes on to say, and this is also indicated by the Bavli a little bit, that this eights was already prepared, Misheshis Mebreshis, for Haman. Because the Gemara in Chulin asks Haman min HaTorah minayin, and it says Hamin HaEitz. So the name Haman is already indicative of the eights that was set from Sheshis Me'abrashis. Now our Gemara wants to explain that this eights was prepared and designated Milchat Chila for Haman, and it's indicated by the Pasuk. Why by the pasuk? It says es ha'etz asher heichin lo. The word lo is completely superfluous. It would have said asher heichin, and we knew because the beginning of the pasuk it says that he prepared for Mordechai. So what's the lo? The extra word lo, and therefore Chazal say that this is a remez that this was prepared for him, meaning for Haman himself. Now there's another approach to this Gemara that goes the following. That the decision or the explanation of the Gemara that this was the tree that was prepared for Haman is not based on a diuk in the pasuk, like you said before, the extra word lo, but rather it's based on the sequence of events. What does that mean? He says the following: Ha'uvdos mochicho shedarko shel Haman b'achana isi zu shegarmalo lebasof litolis olif. The way that Haman prepared the tree itself led to the fact that Haman would be hung up on that tree. Why? Because let's ask the following question: how could Haman have prepared this eitz and then afterwards ask the king for the green light to hang up Mordechai? It should have gone the other way around. First, he would have asked permission from the king to hang up Mordechai, and then he would prepare the tree. Ella, but rather, since Achashverosh himself was a hafchafchan, right, he would change his mind, Haman was afraid that even if he got the agreement from Achashverosh in the interim until he could implement that agreement, that green light, the license to hang up Mordechai, Achashverosh would change his mind. So therefore, Haman was very eager to set up the tree so that immediately, the same second he would get the green light from Achashverosh, he would implement the Netliya of Mordechai. Therefore, he prepared the tree immediately so that it would be ready for immediate use. Now, the king says, let's hang up Haman on that tree. Now, if that tree wasn't prepared, then maybe Achashverosh would change his mind. You know, he had a momentary fit of anger and he said to hang up Haman, but then, you know, he quiets down. But since the ace was already muchan, again, it was prepared for Mordechai, because Haman was afraid that Ahasuerus would change his mind. Therefore, when Haman was hung up on that very same tree, it clarifies, you know, retroactively, we see that the derech of Haman, the approach of Haman to prepare the tree, was really preparing the way that he would be hung up before Ahasuerus would change his mind and cool off. Now, why is it that Achashverosh wants to give so much glory to Mordechai? What's the dochak over here? The Mefarshim want to know, what pressed Achashverosh, who was a Sonei Yisrael, he hated the Jews even more than Haman, as we learned back on Daf Yudalid, what pushed him, therefore, to give Mordechai such great schar, yikaru gedula, and it had to be urgent, you know, al tapel davar mikol sher divar, to do it immediately? Achashverosh was afraid that Mordechai would take advantage of this opportunity that the king is asking him for schar. The king is not asking, but the king is interested in giving him payment and expressing his gratitude. Achashverosh was afraid that Mordechai, by the way, if I get mixed up with the names, you'll bear with me, the three names that I'm trying to juggle.
It's getting close to Purim.
Yeah, it's getting close to Purim. So again, so Achashverosh was afraid that Mordechai would ask that instead of giving me glory and carrying me, you know, rounding me up here, you know, with the big day and the source and everything, just save my life, spare me. And therefore, it was critical and urgent for Achashverosh to implement this schar so that Mordechai would have no right later on to ask for self, you know, to be spared. For clemency, if I could use that word. If this is true, then we can answer another question. The pasuk says that immediately after the whole episode in which Haman took Mordechai around, it says Vayoshev Mordechai el Shara'ir, or whatever it says within the pasuk. Why did Mordechai go back? So Chazal interpret that he went back to Sako Vitaniso. Now, after all, he just had the greatest kavod that the king could give him. Why is he going back to Sako? Didn't he realize at this point that he was in good shape, he was, you know, that the tides were turning? But the answer is no, because Mordechai understood that the reason why this great gedula was done with such urgency is so that Mordechai would not have a chance to ask for a different payment, namely that he should be spared. So he realized that, you know, Ahasuerus here gives him the gedula not out of a love for Mordechai, but really out of a hatred for Mordechai. Now, I don't know if we have time for this, so I'm just going to mention it in passing, but there's a whole long discussion here in the Achronim, brought down here in the Yalkut Biurim, about this barber haircut story, you know, with Haman is cutting the hair of Mordechai. So I'll just mention to you a chiddush of Yonis and Eibeshitz. And I say with a smile, because sometimes the Achronim become, you know, it's called a vitz in Yiddish. I don't know how you say it in English. You know, they find some sharp, you know, calculation here. So Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz says the following. The day of fasting began on the 14th of Nisan, and therefore the third day of the fasting, which is the day in which Haman took Mordechai around, was the 16th of Nisan. I'm sorry, 14, 15, 16. The 16th of Nisan. Oh, exactly. So you know the Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz?
No, but it's logic.
And what's that called that day?
Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur. Sheni Shel Goliath. So listen to Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz. And just to show, you know, how a Talmud Chacham sees a Gemara, he says the following. On Yom Kippur Sheni Shel Goliath, in the city of Shushan, there's an Isur Malacha. And therefore, how is it possible that Mordechai would have a rechitza and no less than a haircut on Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliath? We don't bathe, you know, on Yom Tov. Okay, there are some want to be makil if you're full of sweat, and maybe you can take a shower. You know, I'm not going to go into all these issues.
Shower, yeah.
But I think we're talking about a Lavamish going into the Beis HaMerchatz, and this is all also bin Rabbanan on Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliath. Oh. So he says the following. Bishleim, I can understand Rechitza. Maybe at the time of Mordechai, they had not yet instituted or enacted that Gzerah of Rechitza. Are you familiar with the sugya of Rechitza?
Yes.
About the Malonim, right? Yeah, we're afraid that they would heat up the water. The whole, so we don't know exactly historically when that Gzerah was enacted. And maybe at the time Mordechai was not yet enacted. But l'histat there, to cut your hair is an Issa Doraisa. Comes along the Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, and he learns a halacha conclusion from this story, from this episode. He says that on Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliath, if there are two conditions met, you're allowed to have your hair cut. What are these two conditions? Number one, al yidei akum, that a guy could cut your hair. And number two, l'tzarech mitzvah. Now, here, since Mordechai was put in a situation where he had to allow himself, you know, to give cover to the Malchus in the whole story, so that's called a Tzarech Mitzvah. Now, you can't ask a Jew to cut your hair Litzarech Mitzvah, but you can ask a guy to cut your hair on Yom Tov Sheni Litzarech Mitzvah. And he says, Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, that's why Esther sent around a message to all the Jewish barbers that they should close shop. Because she was afraid that Haman would force the Jewish barbers, if they were available, to cut Mordechai's hair, which would be a violation of Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliath.
Why did he have to make that decree? Wouldn't they have been closed already if it was Yom Tov?
I think she said get lost, meaning hide yourself, don't even be available.
Not shut and disturb it, but just
like they did in small towns when one guy sees Masak Masad comes in, he phones around to all the guys, get lost,
right.
You're not here. There's another question you would ask. Like, did they have Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliath at that time?
Yes, that they did. They definitely had Yom Tov Sheni at that time.
So that wasn't an act of Second, you're trying to tell us about the whole communication issue, but there was no base in Mikdash, there was no one sitting in Yerushalayim looking at the...
But why do I get excited about this Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz? I mean, you learn this Gemara, you can read it 50 million times. You know, Haman was the only barber available, and he cut the hair of Mordechai. Like, comes along with Renesan Eves, he derives a halachic conclusion from this Haggadah that tells us a story about, you know, Mordechai and Haman. And the answer is that you're allowed to be mistaper l'tzoch mitzvah yidei goy on Yom Tov Shemesh. Again, I'm not passing halach l'maisa, but it's just fascinating, what I call the histaklut, you know, the perspective of seeing a...
So the same thing applied during the rest of Chol HaMoed in general. I mean, the Chol HaMoed in general, people don't get...
Chol HaMoed is much more severe, I think.
Yeah,
because Chazal made gzeiros that,
right,
so that go even beyond the law of the Torah. Now, he quotes other mafarshim here. I don't know who the Gvul Binyamin is. I'm not sure who that sefer is, but he says that we have a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that you're not allowed to take a haircut by at the hands of an idol, which we're afraid that he might, you know, slice you the wrong way. So he says that this Gemara would prove that, again, I'm not going into all the details. Again, I'm just giving you the flavor of, don't catch me on all the details. It's just that he says that there's a din of Rishus HaRabim, and he says that when it's Rishus HaRabim, then you're allowed to take a haircut even at an akur. So it could be that the reason why Esther made sure that the saparim were not available, it would mean that Haman would have no place to find, you know, a Jew and say, open up your barbershop, and therefore he would have to cut his hair in Rishus HaRabim. In Rishus HaRabim, it's allowed.
I'm not sure you could learn from this situation, though, because Haman wouldn't be... He wouldn't be killing... There's no risk of that happening at this time because, you know, he was specifically ordered by the king
So the Marshal wants to understand... Just one last comment here. The Chassam Sofer wants to understand... Rabbi Yochanan makes a statement, we saw it yesterday, that even Chachma could come from the Umas HaOlam, and it's called, and such a person is called a Chacham. So the Chassam Sofer is bothered by this. He says, Pshita, what's the Chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan? Lama Yigaru Chachmi Umas HaOlam. Why would we have a Havamina? Why would it cross our mind that the scholars of the nations would not be called Chachamim? In fact, we have a bracha that we recite when we come in contact with a chacham from Umas HaOlam, Baruch Shenasa Michal K'mas L'Vasa V'Dam. So the Chassam Sofer wants to suggest the following. There's a difference between chachma and calling someone a chacham. And again, I'm just going to say it in my words and then I'll show it to you inside. When you call someone a chacham, you're telling me that he's... You're describing his personality or his very essence. He says that some sofer, there are some people that you cannot call them such a person a chacham, but you know what? Once in a while, I'm going to use the some sofer's language, nizrekes lo bepiv dvar chachma. He says once in a while, you know, he has a flash of brilliance, you know, and we would have thought that. To call a Jew a chacham, that makes sense. Why? Because a Jew is dedicated to study the Torah, and he's always working in Torah. He also has a special hashgacha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the case of Umas HaOlam, in order to establish themselves as a chacham, it's not enough that once in a while, at one occasion, they said something brilliant, they had a flash. But rather, they have to do it constantly, over and over again. Kamash Malan, the chiddush of this Gemara of Rabbi Yochanan, says the Chassam Sofer is shegam ba'umas ha'olam nekroim chachamim lefi sha'ah, that you can call a person a chacham even if he's only a chacham for this moment in time. Now, the next piece I want to share with you, but first we have to go back to the Gemara, and we'll see the next piece of Gemara. So we're on Daf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, and my goal for today is to get to the middle of Tezayin Omid Beis. Now, if you can help me find the place here, it says Visarise HaMelech Higiu Vayavhilu. Do you have such a thing?
Seventh wide line towards the end.
Okay, seventh of the wide line towards the end. Now the Pasuk says the following: Odam Midabrim Imo. You remember that Haman is having a discussion with his family. And his family said to him, you know, if you began falling in front of your enemy, in front of Mordechai, nafal tipo lefano, right? And we had a whole discussion yesterday about the Jews go down and then they go up. You remember they reach the bottom barrel. And they're talking to him, Visarisi Amelchi Giu Vayavhilu Lahavi Es Haman. Now there's something strange here in the Pasuk, because when Ahasuerus gave the mandate to his sarisim, to his officers, he said Maharu Es Haman. It doesn't say Havhilu Es Haman. So the sarisim, it seems, went one step beyond. The pasuk should have said Usrise Amelech Miaru Es Haman. What's Usrise Amelech Higiu? I'm sorry. What's Usrise Amelech Higiu Vayavhilu? What's Vayavhilu? Says the Gemara, the extra word Vayavhilu tells us Malamicha Hevi Uhu Bibahola. Bibahola means he didn't have a second to clean his clothes. And you could imagine that he probably reeked from the ashpa that his own daughter had poured on his head, which was a kli from the Beis Akise that was full of stuff in it. We won't go into detail. Now Esther, at the Mishteh of Yayin, begs Achashverosh, and she says the following, in pleading for her nation, Ki nimkarnu ani va'ami, and then it says, Ki ein hatzar shove b'nezek ha'melech. There's a long arichus dvarim here. So Gemara says the following. Amrullah, what was Esther saying to Achashverosh? It says, again, we'll read the pasuk, Ki eina tsar shove b'nezek hamel. Tsar zeh, meaning this tsorer, this person who's an enemy, eino shove means he's not concerned, he's not choshesh, b'nezek shel hamelech. He's not interested in, it doesn't bother him one way or other what harm he's going to cause to the king. And I'll prove it to you. Ikne ba bevashti uktola. Now the word ikne, which sounds like kinyan, but has nothing to do with kinyan, comes from the Hebrew word kina, kuf yud nun aleph, which means zealous or jealousy. And what happened, because Chazal say that Memuchan is Haman. Memuchan was the one who gave the Eitzah to have Vashti killed. And it seems that Ahasuerus was harboring a resentment, because that decision was something that Ahasuerus, I guess, was not so, he's not shalem, he was not so comfortable with. Hashta now, a second round, not only the first queen, your previous wife, but ikne bididi umi boy lemiktile. He also has zealousness against me, your own wife, and he's trying to kill me. He's not interested in your benefit. Vayomer amelech Achashverosh. Vayomer liester amalcha. Notice the word vayomer appears twice. Vayomer lomoli, says the Gemara. Why the kfelus? Amar avi avo. Esther heard the words of the king twice. How is that so? And this is very fascinating. There was a meturgamon. There was a translator?
Translator.
There was a translator who would translate from Achashverosh to Esther. Not because Esther didn't understand the language. Tchila al yidei turgamon. Why? Because Achashverosh always suspected that maybe the reason why Esther was hiding her origins is because she came from a very lowly background. And therefore it wasn't lefichvodo to speak directly to her. Now I can't tell you what this means, because it's hard for me to believe that during this whole period of marriage he only communicated her through a meturgamon. But maybe during the daylight hours or when there were other people around. Anyway, as I state in the Gemara, I didn't write the text, so don't blame me. So mitchila, Achashverosh would only speak to her through a meturgamon. Okay?
It's a common thing.
Right. Ein ze michvode shel malchus sheyedaber hamelech pshutei ha'am peh el peh. Okay? You don't speak directly, this is the Ben Ish Chai, to someone who's pshutei ha'am if you're the king. However, now it changed. Kevan di Amrali, now she revealed that this, again, I'm not sure which second in time, but somewhere within the context of this encounter, she reveals not only that she's Jewish and that Haman's trying to kill her and her people, but that she comes from Beis Shol. Kevan di Amrali de Beis Shol Karsina. She is a descendant of Malchus. She's no longer Mipshutei Am. She is a great-great-granddaughter of Shol HaMelech. And there's a long discussion about how Chazal understood, how did they know that she was related to Shol. And the answer is because she was a cousin to Mordechai. Mordechai came from Shevet Binyamin, and Chazal say, Shaul was also, of course, from Shevet Binyamin, that Mordechai was the 10th generation from Shaul HaMelech. And Esther, who was his cousin, was also a great, great, great granddaughter of Shaul HaMelech. Miyad Vayomer Esther Amalka, he speaks to her directly in first person. Vayomer Li Esther Amalka, there's no Meturgamon. So the first Vayomer HaMelech HaKashverosh, he's talking to the Meturgamon. And the second Vayomer Li Esther, he's talking directly to Esther when he finds out who she is, that she's a descendant of Malchus. Again, you could always ask, why does HaKashverosh, who's a Jew hater, why does he care that this Jew is a descendant of Shaul HaMelech? What does it mean to him? And again, this goes back to that very sensitive ambiguity here, because despite the anti-Semitism, there is a certain element of respect towards the Jew, or at least towards someone who is a descendant of Malchus. Vayomer Esther ish sar va'oyev haman hara hazeh. The Gemara wants to know, why is she so wordy here? Ish sar oyev haman hara hazeh. Couldn't she have just said haman hara hazeh parte? Omer Ablozer Malami, this teaches us that when she said ish tsar v'oyev, this is a mind-boggling Gemara. Hoysa mechava, she was pointing her hand klape Achashverosh. Uba malach v'sotar yada klape Haman. Unbelievable. She was pointing towards Achashverosh. There's a long discussion here about what was the halavim here? What was she thinking? Pointing her finger towards Achashverosh ish tsar v'oyev. Ma ro saw Esther laharos bi etzba klape amel v'lomashu ish tsar alo achas dosa lahomis bavurze. She would certainly be put to death for such a thing. And how much more so when she's coming to find favor in his eyes, that's what she wants to do. How ech molo liba l'daber koshos l'charfo to call him Achashverosh. So there are going to be two approaches to this. One approach is she'asas azos shelo b'miskavin. She really didn't think it out, but she was in a state of behola. She was in a state of suffering and pain and anguish for her entire people, and she lost it. And it was only divine intervention that saved her. But what I'm more interested in is in a second approach, and this is the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says the following: Koach ha-dimyon osa bi-odom roshem. When a person is thinking about something, it makes an impact on his soul, and as a result, yochol likashel b'lishono v'lomar b'pivus adavar shehu maharher bo. When a person has a thought that is very profound, he expresses himself not based on, you know, intellectual calculation, pragmatic considerations, but rather just simply as a result of what his heart is feeling.
It's like a Freudian slip.
Maybe like a Freudian slip. But hold on, Eric, because it's much deeper than that. Listen carefully. Hagam shetzorchu bioso regaloma dover ach. He should have said something else. He says, for example, very often a person is thinking about Reuven, and when he calls Shimon, he calls him Reuven. He says that tzaddikim b'chol adoros hayadarkom shekasher hayu tzrichim levakesh dovar lifnei melech basar v'dam. When a tzaddik has to ask something in front of a king, a human king, dimu b'daitam shehinam omdim lifnei melech malchi amlochim. Unbelievable, because a tzaddik is always thinking about God. So that when he relates to a human king, he may say something which is a request that he would put in front of Almighty God. Why? Because his lave, the tzaddik's lave, is being mahar with Melech Malchi Amlochem. Kachoy Yagames Esther, B'eshe Biksham Eish HaMelech. On one level, she was standing in front of a human king, begging with incredible supplication, but on the other hand, Beliba, in her heart of hearts, his Pala Hashem Yisbar, she was really praying to Almighty God. She Yatzila Miyad Haman V'Achashverosh, And she knew that Achashverosh hated the Jews even more than Haman did. Umachma shemachshavta omad, shebemachshavta omad, omad, shachashverosh hu asoni shel Yisrael, since when she was praying kaviyochol in front of the melech malchei hamelachim, in our heart, in our thoughts, she was praying for the destruction of Achashverosh because he was the Soni Yisrael. She made that mistake, and her pen expressed what she had in her heart. But now, Rabosai, we get to the punchline. The Maral Miprag. Says the Maral Miprag, again, I'm going to tell you what he says. I'm not going to tell you that I agree with it or I understand it, but it has to be on the records. Says the Maral in his Or Chadosh, that's his magnum opus on Megillus Esther. Esther achein hiskavna. She had full deliberate intention to point her finger at Achashverosh. How so? B'dayta hoya latzbia Achashverosh, if not for the Malach. Lamrot, despite the sakana b'dover. Why? She understood, says the Maral, that she is a shliach, she's an agent of Almighty God. And Yeshua, a divine salvation, could not come through sheker. Dover shkarim, lo yuchan l'negi einai. And therefore, she knew that the only way that the Yeshua could come about, if there's an absolute commitment to truth without any fabrication, and therefore she said the truth, Ish Tsar V'Yoiv, you Achashverosh are the Ish Tsar V'Yoiv. And her hope was that because of her commitment to truth, the Yeshua Hashem would come. There are many other commentaries here, but we don't have time. But I want you to just think this over, and if you get a chance, I can always photocopy the page for you if you need it.
But the next word he says after Ish Tsar V'Yoiv, the next word is Haman. So how is it? I mean, I get the idea, okay, the Medrash is telling us that pointed this and that, but our next word.
Right. In other words, you're the Ish Tsar V'Yoiv and you're partnering with Haman. You remember the story with the tail and the charitz, you remember? Right. You fill in my hole and I'll take away your charitz. So it's you're the Ish Tsar V'Yoiv. You're the real problem here. But Haman Araza, he's the one who is doing your bidding, right? You wanted to even pay him for that.
Although I mean from a speaking standpoint, this also could just you don't have to say that it's unnecessary. It could be a rhetorical device where she's leading up to point her finger by making it even worse for Haman by saying, each Tsar V'Yoiv Haman has it. Then it's so I could see this as a rhetorical device, not necessarily extraneous words.
Okay, I'm just gonna. I'm rushing towards the finish line. Hamelach kav dechamoso el ginas habison. Hamelach shav miginas habison. Now, what's this all about here? Why did the pasuk have to say that he came back from the ginas habiton? Why is that necessary? He could have just said that yatzel legina v'chazar. But what's this shav miginas habison? So the Gemara makes a hekish over here. The Gemara says makish shiva lekima. He got up in a state of anger. He went out to the garden, and he got angry again—a second anger. Makima, just like when he got up and he went out, bechema, he was angry. Afshiva bechema. What happened out in the garden? Azal v'ashkech lemalachi asharis the idmulek hid gavri. There were angels out there that appeared as human beings. And what were they doing? They were uprooting the trees from the bustan, from this garden. Amalahu, so Achashverosh turns to them and he says, "My avidatayu, like who hired you to take away my trees?" Amrulah, so they responded, the malachim, defakdinon Haman, we got a pkuda, we got a command from Haman. He told us to be oker the ilonos. And once again, Achashverosh is saying, what is going on over here? Now, there's a long interpretation about the symbolic meaning of what it means that Haman would give commands to uproot these trees. So, we'll be net if we get to that. But he says the following. Now, Achashverosh is angry. He's really angry. So he's angry first because Haman was perpetrating a crime against his own queen and her people. Now he's angry because Haman thinks he's taken over the show and he's already chopping down trees in his garden. Basal Abese. Now what happens? The plot grows thicker, if you recall. He comes back in and he finds Haman nofel al hamita shar Esther oleha. Now look at this deal. You know, it's unbelievable how, you know, sometimes I say to myself after learning this, I got it. If I wanted to learn Tanakh based on Chazal, it would take me 50 lifetimes. I mean, just the way they analyze just Psukim in Esther. I mean, Gilles Esther is not even a drop in the bucket of Tanakh. Anyway, so what's the deal, Kofi? The Gemara says it shouldn't have said Haman nofel. Now, there's a difference between nafal and nofel. The word nofel indicates an ongoing, continuous pu'ulah. Nafal means he fell on the mita. So it should have said, Vahaman nafal al mita. Why does it say nofel? Apparently, nofel means this happened more than once. Nafal mi boile, it should have said. Amar Rabbi Elazar, malamit sheba malach vipilu aleha. And when she went, so the Malach pushed Haman on top of Esther. You can imagine what that looked like from the outside. And then Haman tried to get up. And again the Malach pushed him down. So this happened multiple times. And it looked like Haman was really trying his best to woo the queen, or whatever word you want to use, Ophia. So Achashverosh sees what's going on. Omar, he declares, Vai mi besa, vai mi bra. There's a tzara here in my house. There's a tzara out in the garden. In other words, not only are you giving me tzaras in the garden where you think you're boss and you start uprooting trees, now you're trying to get my wife. Now what is the extra word hagam? And the Gemara says that hagam means that there's an extra taina. And this is the indication of what we said before in the pasuk itself, but this is the indication that something happened when he went out to the Gina, and therefore Hagam, and now in addition you're trying to take away my queen. What happened out in the Gina, and why did the pasuk say Shav HaMelech Shav Mi Gina? So that's the whole story about his oka trees. And again, as I said before, we have a long discussion here, maybe on Sunday, about what this Akira Silonos has to do. Maybe it's a good discussion with Tu Bishvat. Okay, fine. Vayomer Charbona, now Rabosai. I have to admit to you, this next piece of Gemara is a real disappointment for me. My hero on Purim is Charbona. And now I'm going to have to give up all my years of celebrating Purim. At least according to this Madiyom. I hope there's another Madiyom, because in Shoshana Yaakov we say Gam Charbona Zochel Atov, and you all know the niggun, Vagam 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 Vagam, and we go crazy over that. You know, I was Rosh Shiva Maaser for 18 years, and we used to go wild over Charbona, because first I loved Charbona, right? But now I don't know. I'm even too scared. It says Vayomer Charbona. I'll read the whole pasuk. Echad min asori sim. And he prepared it for Mordechai Asher Dibur Tov Al HaMelech. Omer Rabbi Elazar, Af Charbona Rasha Bi Osa Eitzahaya. Unbelievable. This is my hero. My hero Charbona. I'm crying. I'm so upset. He's a Rasha, says Rabbi Elazar. He was the one who gave Haman the Eitzah. No, it's, how did he know about this, that this Eitz was prepared? It didn't say Mordechai's name on it. The answer is he was the one who gave the Eitz.
He did tshuva.
I don't know. The Gemara says Barach. So I don't know. Kevon Shavuah Shalom Iskaimatz also. He realized that Haman is on his way down. Miyad Barach. Now, I don't know. The word Barach to me means that he fled. Can you tell me what he says on Barach?
Because it also says that he fled.
Right, but no footnote. I mean, no, the Masif to let me down over here. Barach, I think, means that he was afraid that they would find out that he, Charbona, was the one who instigated this whole thing. And maybe they'd hang him up on the tree. V'hainu d'ksiv. It says regarding this whole story, just so everyone just read the pasuk. Oh, yeah. It says with regard to this whole story, a pasuk in Eov, if the Gemara Dash is a pasuk in Eov, Vayashlech Olav, V'lo Yachmol Miado, Baruch Yivrach, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu thrusts a Rasha into a state of Peronios, he has no compassion, and Bnei Seyasa and those who are together with him are also going to be punished. Which means that if you're in a bad group, you know, and you're accused of being in cahoots with the chief mafioso, you know, the real evil guy, you're going to get in trouble as well. You're going to be punished. So what should you do? So the pasuk tells you, miyado baroach yivrach, that he should be boreach. He should run away. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, I mean, this basically says that is, but it seems to me that it's interesting. It says he fled, but he didn't really run away. He fled kind of in spirit. In other words, he changed sides, but he didn't actually.
Now, so you don't want to take it literally.
I mean, because he was right there to tell them exactly what was going
right,
on.
Right, but it sounds like he immediately flew the coop because he realized that they're going to find out that he was involved in this. In other words, I would agree with you, Eric, except for the pasuk. You know, and Osha said he did tshuva. I don't know, the pasuk itself, which Gemara is quoting here, tells the cohorts or the Rasha that they're going to get punished. So, Brach Yivram, get the heck out of there.
But yet he was right there, but yet he was there and he stopped to give advice. So,
again,
so
he was just
metaphorically.
Yeah,
he
maybe he was trying his best to cover up because he was afraid they would find out, but he knew that ultimately they would discover him. Now the Gemara says that in all of Tanakh, and here on the bottom I have a whole list of psukim, the word always says with one chav. If you give me 2 minutes, I'll be able to turn the page, which is what I want to do. I just want to turn the page. He says the following: why does it say shachacha with two chavs? In all of Tanakh, the word shachacha only has one chav. And the answer is that the quieting down of the anger, the calming, was a twofold. There were two beings, so to speak, that became calm. And the Gemara has two interpretations. One is the following: Achas shel Malko shel Olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu now was mochel klal Yisrael on the avera that, you know, they were guilty of whatever they were guilty of. Let's say Yishtachavol Etzelam at the time of Nuchanetzar. So that means that the Malko shel Olam was now, he was okay, God was okay. The Achas shel Achashverosh, that he had an anger and he wanted to destroy the Jewish people. He gave Haman the rights to do so, but now he changes his mind, so to speak. His anger against the Jewish people calms down. The Amalei, but there's another interpretation of the double shachacha. Achashal Esther. Esther was angry at Haman because he tried to kill her and the Jewish people. Now that he was killed, she was a little bit calmed down. The Achashal Vashti. And now Achashverosh feels that Nochadaito, because even though he had killed, he had, based on Haman's Hamlotza, he had had Vashti killed, but now at least he has a queen and he's consoled about that. Now, at this point, the Agadah takes an entirely different turn. And we're going to talk about the relationship between Yosef and his brother Binyamin. What happens is, and we'll see how this ties into our sugya, is that after Yosef reveals his identity to his brothers, he gives out gifts. And guess what? He gives the best gift to his brother Binyamin. His brother gets 5 chalifos, 5 times what the other brothers got. Ulekula nosan liish chalifos smolos, Binyamin nosan chamesh chalifos. Says the Gemara, I don't understand. Efshar, how could Yosef be repeating the same error that got him into trouble? Dovash and its tire bo osa tzaddik, the tsar, all the suffering that was caused to this tzaddik, to Yosef, because his father gave him of favoritism, and now he's gonna give favoritism to his brother Binyamin. That seems like a pretty dumb thing to do. And now we turn to the after Zion of Beis Yikashelbo. He himself is gonna get in trouble if he's gonna give these extra chalifos to Binyamin. Isn't he afraid that's gonna incur the jealousy of his brothers? The Amar Rava Bar Machasyom, a Rav Chama, Bar Guriyom, a Rav Bishvil, Mishkal, Shnei Shloim, whole long discussion about how exactly the Shnei Shloim works out. Shal Melas, Melas is Tzemer, Noki, Umeshubach, Shal Hosef, Yaakov, Liosef, he gave him the Ketonis Pasim, Ishar Echov, Nizgal, Galadom, Vyordu, Avosenu, Mitzrayim, Amra Binyomin, Bar Yofas, Ramaz, Lo Remez. This was not really a gift in the material sense. Maybe it was, but it was really a remez. Now, exactly what this remez is, Beli Neder, we'll see on Yom Rishon, because I see the hour is late, and I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a great Shabbos. I ask Mechila, if I don't answer your questions, it's just that, you know, I'm very eager to finish with this Agata. I love this Agata, but I really, honestly, I would need 24 hours, 7 days a week to do a good job on this Agata. As is, I find a few hours to try to prepare. And
Yes. You were just asking though if there was a commentary here on the Baruch, and it did say. I just was realizing that in the English translation, which is essentially part of the commentary, they were basically saying fled and turned sides and turned towards Mordecai. So in other words, it's kind of like the fleeing was not really a physical fleeing. I don't know.
I would go through what's called the Otsrat Filos, which is a super commentary on the YouTube on the Filos.
Is this spread out?
No, this is exactly how I found it, and I got rid of the milk, so you don't have to worry about that. And I wanted to tell you that this line in the Shoshanis, now Shoshanis Yaakov is Holy of Holies. Did the Sfaradim say Shoshanis Yaakov? It was only Ashkenazim. Shoshanas Yaakov, all of his Amecha. Can you look it up? Because I got the impression that all of Klal Yisrael accepted that piyut. Okay. It may have even been authored by a Sfaradi.
You know?
But it says, "V'gam Charbonis Ochel Atov." You know, so.